Today, I caught the bug. Thank goodness, not the bad kind. With zero-cost immunizations and preventative services, I can do my best to keep healthy.
If you are on Medicare or know someone on Medicare, call CareMore at 1-800-965-1217 today or visit our website at caremore.com.
ESPN.com. This is Brian Kamenetsky of the LATimes.com Lakers blog. Joined as always by my brother Andrew Kamenetsky with the same resume.
Yep. Anything he's done, I've done. Probably not even
about the same.
Yeah.
It's not like that song.
It's twice the mediocre work for one podcast.
That's right. That's actually when we go and pitch ourselves to newspaper and radio executives, that's actually what we tell them.
We say to them, you will inevitably hire one dog at one price. We can give you double that dog for one
mediocrity
price.
Mediocrity squared.
That's actually tatted across my chest.
That's exactly right. We are very excited today because the preseason is not officially over, but by the time many of you hear this podcast, it will be damn near over,
which was
mercifully over. Kobe Bryant spoke last night, after the last night being Thursday night after the Lakers beat the Denver Nuggets in Anaheim, that this preseason has felt longer to him than almost any other preseason he's ever felt. This is his, what, 13th year in the league, something like that?
13th or 14th.
He's had a lot of them.
Yeah, he couldn't quite put his finger on why necessarily.
I can too. Because there's, you know, this is a really good team. And we all kind of know where they're going. We think we know where they're going. So
you got to slog through these games.
Just get there.
Got to slog through games, right, officiated by a bunch of hacks.
Hacks. You play the Golden State Warriors 12 times in six games.
What was great? What I did love though was seeing last night. You know, we're sitting courtside, so you know we can really hear a lot of what's going on. I love watching Kobe, who knows that this ref he's talking to is going to be gone in like a day.
They're
still dressing,
you know what,
the guy down.
They're all lobbying. It just, I loved it though.
It was,
I looked
great
at another writer sitting next to me. I said, do you think they do this because, and for people who haven't heard, it looks like hopefully by this time next week, we're recording on Friday morning, by this time next week, the real officials will be back. Hopefully by opening night, they'll be back. But, you
can't
know,
come
like,
sooner.
We were joking, I was joking with the guy next to me that, They lobby the referees out of habit because they can't help themselves, you know, because they, maybe they haven't heard the news or whatever. They just, if they were playing at the rec and it was being run by rec league refs, they'd push those guys. They cannot help it. It's built into their genetic code at this point. Not just Kobe. It's all of them.
Remember when our buddy, I don't want to say his name, but his initials are RD. Remember when he got suspended for a game from his rec league for getting too many tees?
Yeah, it's phenomenal stuff.
It was great.
Yeah, I like that.
I've never even heard of getting a tee in a rec league.
That. The Lakers will finish the preseason no worse. They finish it off Friday night in San Diego against the Denver Nuggets, the same Nuggets they beat on Thursday night, rather impressively, I might say. At worst, they will finish the preseason 6-2.
At best,
7-1. Yes. Thank you for doing the math. There actually is a chance I would have gotten that wrong.
I know. That's, I mean, I wanted to cover
some
you.
People are, you know, or I might have thought that you were just saying the obvious, but he actually might have been, Andy might have been saving me from a bit of embarrassment there. We'll get into a couple of the big issues of the preseason, how our impressions of it. The one frightening thing, Pau Gasol didn't play Thursday night. He did not play in Ontario on Tuesday, correct? Tuesday?
Yes.
And hasn't played for a little while for that matter. Isn't going to play Friday and is semi-questionable for Tuesday. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen then. Andrew Bynum didn't play, on Thursday night. Said he probably would have if it was an important game. Definitely would have if it was a like a playoff game or
Did
something
he give
like
himself
that.
A percentage of where he's at?
No. And I like when he does that. Andrew Bynum likes to give himself the diagnosis he is 87%.
But I'm still not feeling good at
still,
all.
Right. You know, something like he's just all over the place. He's the worst self-diagnostician.
He's not
in
the mind.
The world.
He is not the mind behind WebMD.
He is not Dr. Oz.
No.
He is not going to be on Oprah. So, you know, the injury thing. I mean, on the, look, I don't know how serious Pau Gasol's injury is. You know, obviously it's seriously enough. He practiced Wednesday, and the idea was if he felt okay, he would play Thursday. He didn't play Thursday, therefore he probably didn't feel okay.
Crack journalism.
Right. You know, say I'm going from A to Z here or something like that. I'm connecting the dots. I think I've done it okay. You know, long run, even if he misses the first three or four games of the season, if he comes back and he plays, it's really not that big a deal. Andrew Bynum hurts the shoulder, should be okay. This injury, probably not that big a deal. But to me, Luke Walton has been hurt. You know, Lamar Odom got kicked in the shin. It just, and I know we've talked about this, but it just gets back to that point of how lucky the Lakers were last season. Take away the Bynum injury. Jordan Farmar missed a little bit of time. But nobody else other than Andrew Bynum in that front line, or of their front line players, missed a lot of time. Kobe played almost every. Kobe, Fish,
and
Lamar, Ariza,
Pau.
And Pau basically played every game. So there was continuity all the way through. I mean, if you have guys missing 15 games here, 10 games there, 15 games there, you know, whatever, two or three different, four different guys over the course of the season, that messes with your continuity, even if the man games played is a reasonably good number.
Yeah, and particularly, like you're saying, it really messes it up if it's jumbled in terms of who's in the lineup, who's out. You're almost better off with one guy missing a whole
Andrew
season.
Bynum. Right, because you have time. The Lakers had time to adjust to it. And, you know, you can't. The Lakers, I think, have a lot of, there are certain things about injuries that can be controlled. You know, your fitness, the amount of playing time, how hard you push guys at practice, the training staff, all of these other things. And I think on those points, the Lakers are very solid. You know, they have a very well respected training staff. Phil Jackson is very good at understanding how hard to push guys, giving guys time off. But you can't help if somebody rolls into your leg or if you step on somebody's foot. And there are certain things that are just accidental, and eventually your card, so to speak, comes up.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's, you know, my concern. It's a lot of people's concern is that lottery eventually gets to the Lakers,
or even a guy like DJ Benga, who, you know, is their third string center, happened to have a terrific game,
last night. Seven blocks,
8 points. He did. This was great. He hit a jumper to
right at the top of the key
to close the end of the third quarter. And he did the little guns with his hands. He did the little finger guns. I'm hot as a pistol.
And you asked him about that afterwards, and he kind of smiled. I don't know if he noticed that people saw that little move.
Oh,
DJ
picked up on it.
DJ with the six shooter.
But even DJ, though, has been dealing with a groin issue. And that's something that can be very difficult to get rid of over the course of the season, particularly when you're always active. And, you know, that depth, you know, you don't want DJ playing 35 minutes a night for an entire season, but he provides terrific depth, and he's great with helping out Andrew and Pau
in practice. Absolutely.
He works them. He's an essential part of why they're good.
Groin injuries, hamstring injuries, which is what Pau has.
These are things
that are scary. A hamstring injury to me is a scarier injury in some ways than a sprained knee.
I would agree 100%.
You know, so, you know, the Lakers, you know, there's no reason to believe that Pau in 2 weeks, even if it takes 2 weeks, goes beyond the opener, won't be okay. But I think this preseason has, I don't want to say driven the point home, but it's definitely alerted people to the potential problem of, you know, it may not be smooth sailing and how, you know, tenuous even the hold that even a great team has on the top of a conference.
If nothing else, it reminds you of just how lucky the Lakers were last year.
Right. The flip side of that is that this depth that you talked about, DJ Benga had a great game. There have been some really good preseasons for guys who weren't necessarily great last year. Jordan Farmars, I thought, overall had a very strong preseason.
Other than Andrew Bynum, I think you can make the argument Farmars had the best preseason of everyone.
You absolutely can. Sasha Vujicic has been, I think, very good overall in the preseason.
Shannon
Brown has been good.
Josh Powell has been terrific.
You know,
games.
Played strong, and so, you know, they are showing that they have the depth to play if guys get hurt. And, you know, I think it's especially important that a guy like Sasha, like we talked about, it has a good preseason.
Right. Sasha has a very long memory and can be oversensitive at times as it is.
A little bit.
Little emotional.
A little bit.
And he talked about at his exit interview and then talked about it again on media day, how he really was going to take, he's going to take an effort to just say, whatever role I have, it's what I do. I'm not going to worry about getting my shots up. I'm not going to worry about being the machine. And so far, he seems to be walking the walk, which is nice, because I think
at
it will
least
be essential
in
preseason.
And right. We'll see. You know, it just it depends, you know, what happens after that. I think Farmar has played himself into a nice, you know, very solid role in the rotation. I think, you know, Shannon Brown, they'll figure it out.
The two one of
those
them guys played nicely
but
together.
One of those guys, Sasha Vujicic, Shannon Brown, probably especially between the two of them, and to a lesser extent Jordan at the point. One of those two, Shannon and Sasha, are going to eat into each other's minutes because, you know, and then depending on what Phil wants to do, if Farmar doesn't play well, Sasha and Shannon could eat into Jordan's. But one of the three is probably going to lose some minutes somewhere, so we'll have to see how they handle
it. It could be, though. I mean, he has played the three of them together, too, and in certain matchups, if another team's going small, I could see him putting all three of them
out
there.
Yeah, but once the season starts and you get everybody playing, you know, the minutes that they would normally play, then obviously the rotation shrinks a little bit. The available minutes for reserve shrinks.
Sure.
So I think it's a little bit different. The two biggest issues that we've talked about over the course of the preseason, though, definitely, I think, and for Laker fans, the two players on the front of their minds have been Ron Artest and how he's fitting in, how they're integrating him, and then also Andrew Bynum and how he's bounced back from a disappointing postseason, from the knee injury, all these things. You know, we've talked about them throughout the preseason. However, Bynum has looked very good offensively.
I think that's a fair statement.
20 points a game. You know, he's playing about 30 minutes a night. Did not play Thursday night, but, you know, again, should be okay. 20 points a game. 7 rebounds, which is, you know, I think a little less than what they were looking for in the 30 minutes. But offensively, at least, he's looked very active. They're back to throwing those alley-oops. They're, you know, Bynum has been assertive in the post.
He's shown off some nice moves.
He's working hard to get position, you know, changing tactics. There was a game against the Clippers when he was frustrated, I think, a little bit by Chris Kaman, who was the first really good center he'd played in the preseason. Missed some early shots and then changed his tactics a little bit. And just beat Kaman down the floor. Down there quickly, sealed him off. And Kaman runs the floor well. And he just beat him down the floor and worked it that way.
I was going to say, he's made a very conscientious effort to be the first guy down the floor as opposed to last year where he was often the last
guy.
And he realizes this is going to get him more touches just by itself.
Right. He seals his man. It's an easy play. You know, the guy at the wing throws at the guy at the corner into the post. It's an easy deuce. What is interesting, though, about Bynum, and this is pure Phil Jackson, is that no matter what he does on that side, 20 points a game, when he is asked about it, he gives essentially the same response. This is from practice earlier this week when Phil Jackson was asked about Andrew Bynum and his contributions and how he's getting up and down the floor.
Yeah. Did you like what you saw from him last night? First down the floor,
time. You know, you ask me questions like that, and I rarely say yes. Sure.
Okay.
I mean, there are about four or five defensive things that really got to me. You know, that's where I want to see that improvement. Offensively, he's doing great. He's dunking that ball and getting that ball to the basket. He's doing a good job. But those defensive things, we've got to.
Is it screen roll stuff?
Some of it's just basic awareness. It's the basic, you know, protection of the basket, which our big guys have to do. And, you know, that's where we want to make our statement as defensively as a team.
Yeah, so Phil always goes back to, we need him to do the big man stuff. His most complimentary game, I believe it was against the Clippers. Was it the Clippers where he had the 13 rebound game, Andrew Bynum?
I think it was, actually.
But, you know, so that was the game that that Phil Jackson was most complimentary of. And even last night, Thursday in Anaheim, DJ Banga comes out and blocks 7 shots. The media talks to Phil about DJ. What does Phil say?
He says, DJ had 7 blocks, which is probably more than Anders had all preseason.
They call
that a dig.
Right, maybe kind of, actually could be close to true. Only Bynum is averaging, no, is fewer because Bynum is averaging 1.3 blocks in 6 preseason games. So,
but okay, look,
he is slightly above.
But I but think the point right, stands. Right, I'm either kidding. Way, I mean, Phil did not have the stats in front of him. He
right.
was guesstimating.
Right. And he was actually pretty close. So, you know, that is going to be where Phil rides him all season. But I think overall they're pleased with what he's done early.
As well they should be.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see. Now, Bynum plays, we've talked about this and we'll continue to talk about it with the, you know, the rotations and who finishes games and how many minutes people play. You know, if Bynum plays really well, again, it gets to that issue of sacrifice. Everybody's going to have to give something away. And as long as they're winning, it's probably not an issue, but, you know, Phil's going to have to manage that.
And all of this changes once Pau Gasol's back, too. He's not going to get as many shots
exactly.
off. He's not going to be the first guy that they dump into the post every time. Everything changes. You know, you have to take a lot of this with, I'd say, an enthusiastic grain of salt, because he's been doing a lot of this with Pau not there.
Right.
It's different with Pau.
You just have to hope that the statistical production, you know, the effort and all that stuff doesn't change when his touches go down, which is something that Andrew has been prone to over the course of his career, that everything stays the same. It just is on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
And he needs to rebound the ball more. He just doesn't rebound quite like you would want a 7-footer.
Or that he's shown capable.
Right. You know, put a body on a guy. Phil calls it a lot of times. Phil does, that's what he's referring to when he's just talking about awareness, blocking a guy out, knowing where to put your body, things like that. Ron Artest has been the other side of that. If Andrew Bynum has been the most assertive offensive, you know, player on the court, and often he is, you know, Jordan Farmar has been very aggressive and all these other things, but of their headliner players, Bynum has been consistently very aggressive. Ron Artest has probably been the least aggressive offensively, and that's something that they've spent almost the entire preseason trying to kind of get him out of that.
Well, it's interesting because everybody was talking about, can Ron Artest adjust to taking, you know, 8 to 10 shots a game as opposed to 12 plus that he'd normally had. It's looking right now like you're going to have to prod him to take 8.
Right. And he has led the team in assists.
Right.
In at least 2 or 3 games, among the team leaders in preseason assists, you know, overall on an average basis. He's moving the ball
very well.
There were a couple of things, and I think they've tried to put him in positions that empower is a little bit of a, I think, a strong word, but the idea is to make him an integral part of the offense where he's not floating around, where he's not doing something. They had him in the Ontario game. They had him running with the second unit, and he was doing a lot of stuff out of the high post, you know, making passes, directing traffic and things like that out of there, which was, I thought, very effective. They put him in situations where he's isolated up. We remember the Vegas game where he was isolated on the wing with Andres Nocioni, very strong player, and took him to the hoop. I think, you know, for me at least, I've gotten a feel for not necessarily how well he'll fit into the offense and what it's all going to look like, but some of the things that he can do that Trevor can't. That play for me, that drive, left-handed drive, finish at the rim on Nocioni, that's not something Trevor Ariza can do. And it's not a dig on Trevor, but it's just an illustration of how different they are as players.
Well, I mean, he's a much better passer overall than Trevor, and I think he has more of an intuitive feel for a game. You know, he's been around it longer.
Sure.
He's been in the pros longer. When people talk about Ron being aggressive, and, you know, they're often talking about looking for his shots, and, you know, people talk about that way with Kobe a lot
right.
last year. You know, the idea of, is Kobe going to come out of this game aggressive? And they're always talking about looking for a shot. I think in a lot of times that's a very limited way to view it. And when Kobe has the ball in his hands a lot, but he is setting up people and looking for guys. And Kobe he's got the vision of a point guard.
Absolutely. No question.
He is as good a passer as anyone in the league, and he sees the court just tremendously. I consider that aggressive.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right.
And if Ron is operating this way, you know, almost like a point forward, for lack of a better way of putting it, I actually think it's fine, because not only is he being effective and productive and useful and he's contributing, it takes away, theoretically, the issue of where are some of these shots going to come from other people. If he's volunteering to give them up, you still need him to be a
right.
threat.
It's just, that's the thing, is you need
find
him to
balance.
Take open shots when they're there.
Right.
But what you're talking about with Kobe is an aggression where you are look to make constructive things happen.
Exactly.
With, you know, positive things happen with the ball. It might be a pass, it might be a cut, it might be a shot. But trying to force, not force is the wrong word, but trying to, you know, continue the action as opposed to being passive with the ball where you get it and you're automatically looking for the next pass in the sequence.
Right.
You know, and that, and I think as this preseason has gone on, our test has gotten better about
looking
taking that
it.
Shot. There was a baseline, you know, Melo was giving up the baseline, mid-range baseline shot to him last night. He took a couple and made, you know, there was one he made, I know. It'll come. I there's nothing I've seen here where you go at it and you say, whoa, you
right,
know,
no.
man, this is not, this is going to be, they're not going to run as much. He's not like Ariza on the wing where he gets out and finishes the break. They're not going
to
do that.
But I don't
him.
Think they really want to that badly.
But, and,
anyway.
And that's okay. They don't run that much with the first unit as it is, and they have other guys who can get up and down the floor.
Yeah, I just think it's so limited to just basically equate aggressiveness equals shots put up. You know, I think it's often unfair to Kobe, and it's potentially unfair to our test in terms of how they're really impacting the game.
All right, so the preseason basically done. Next week is the is ring night, Tuesday night. They kick off the season against the Clippers. And then, you know, they have 81 more games after that. So,
and I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So that's the Lakers. That's the end of the preseason. We've talked about the Lakers in the preseason. We've covered that, I think. All the ins and outs, all the big topics.
If there is a nook and or a cranny that has been unexplored,
I don't know what it is. You're right. Exactly.
It goes too deep.
Right. So with the season right around the corner, of course, you know, we've talked a lot about the Western Conference, mostly focusing on teams that may not matter as much as the Lakers look for that repeat title. Today, though, we're going to turn our attention to the teams that actually pose a threat.
Right. And because these teams are so good, we need a third person.
Right. We need somebody, we need someone smarter than us,
to
break this down.
Exactly.
And it wasn't hard to find someone smarter than us. That's not hard.
What's hard is finding someone who'll come on.
Right, and is good. And
right,
we managed
exactly.
to do both. Joining us right now, ESPN the Magazine's Chris Palmer, long time, writes about everything, but, you know, tons of basketball, lots of great stuff going way back. He's got a Blake Griffin article, I believe, coming out. He plays for the Clippers.
Yes.
He's a number one pick.
Absolutely.
That'll be coming out in the next couple issues or so. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, it'll be out in just a few weeks.
Very good. So keep an eye out for that. You can, in the meantime, just Google him. Google him liberally and read lots and lots of things. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Like I said, we've talked a lot about the Lakers. And there's so much. I mean, basically everybody and their uncle and their cousin has the Lakers winning the Western Conference. Do you fall into that as well?
I mean, I fall into that. I mean, it's really hard not to based on, you know, the fact that they're bringing back everybody this year except for Ariza, and I think Ron Artest makes them stronger. So it's really, really tough to go against the Lakers. I'm not saying anything new there. I mean, I think it's the Lakers are absolutely the favorite to get back to the finals and to win it all.
But looking at the other teams, you know, that are challengers, you know, maybe let's just sort of break this down a little bit team by team. One of the, I think, the more interesting teams that I guess is probably outside of the upper crust would be that it would be Dallas. You know, they change with adding Sean Marion,
right?
And you know, Josh Howard seems reasonably healthy. That you know they, or, you know, if he is healthy, you know, that makes a huge difference for them. It's a more interesting group of players with Marion there. What do you see going on in Dallas? Can they jump up a little bit higher?
Absolutely, because I think that the addition of
Sean Merriman would be an interesting pickup.
I mean, Sean Merriman might help.
They could use the post strength. I don't think there's a question.
You know, but I think by December, as we're going to look at that as being one of the best acquisitions so far this season, because he's the kind of guy you saw in Phoenix. He can fit in anywhere with anybody. And he's kind of accepted the fact that, see, he's always wanted to be the guy, and he thought he was going to be the guy when he left the Suns, and the situation proved that he is never going to be the guy, and I think he's accepted that, and he's in a good situation right now. Had a strong preseason, only played two games, but averaged 20 points. But he can do just about everything, and he's willing to do just about everything. So, but, I mean, the thing that I love about him, you know, you can put him alongside of Nowitzki, Jason Terry, Drew Gooden, Josh Howard, all these guys, Dampier. They got a really, really strong top six. So I love them to move up and be a lot better than they were last year.
With Kidd, Terry, you know, their top players, Kidd, Terry, Howard, Marion, and then
Dirk.
Do you see them going small a lot? I mean, are they going to be kind of doing almost a version of the old Suns?
Right. I mean, really, Eric Dampier is their only traditional post player.
Yeah,
right.
He's the only traditional post player. They're going to be fast. I mean, they're going to move. I mean, even Dirk likes to get out there and run. So, yeah, I definitely see him going with that sort of up-tempo attack. But why would you not want to with that kind of lineup? Because you got guys who can just fly, like Howard and Terry, and obviously Marion, so used to running with Nash and the Suns back in the day 2 years ago. But, I mean, I think that's the style that they're going to be really successful with.
On the flip side of it, there's a lot of, I guess, the elite teams in the league, where, you know, whether you're talking Lakers, Celtics, Cavs, you know, Portland has a lot of big players. Do you see them being able to match up well, or is that going to end up causing a problem?
I mean, I think they're definitely going to experience some matchup difficulties. I mean, can you picture a lineup with Nowitzki, Marion, and Howard? I mean, what makes them strong might also kill them as well, because they do not have a lot of size, which is going to hurt them. So they're going to need bruisers to get in there and bang people like Gooden and Humphreys. I mean, those guys are going to have to get in there and just really mix it up, you know, when other teams like Portland and other teams that are bigger than they are, like the Clippers, who are huge, they're going to need those guys to really get in there and put bodies on people. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, and along those lines, I mean, sort of last question, I guess, about the Mavericks maybe. They went after Gortat, didn't get him. Then they lost Brandon Bass. They replaced those guys, Chris Humphreys, I guess, and Drew Gooden, I guess, are seen as the replacements, you know, in terms of size.
Right.
Can Drew Gooden fill? I mean, I'm a big fan of Brandon Bass. I think it's a great pickup for Orlando. I think it's a big loss for Dallas. Does Drew Gooden fill that role? I mean, he's always struck me as a little too flighty and a little too inconsistent.
He did get rid of the goatee, though, so maybe he's getting serious.
He did, right, a little more that octopus-like thing.
I mean, I'm with you. I would rather have a guy like Brandon Bass, who doesn't say anything but will do everything you ask him to do. A big, strong guy. And by the way, his waist, I don't know if you've ever seen him in the locker room with his shirt off. He literally has the waist of a 14-year-old girl. It's unbelievable. I mean, so he has the oddest-looking cartoonish superhero body. But
I can't decide if you just got this podcast in trouble with that statement.
Yeah, may be off my game for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, well, this may be you guys' last show.
It really might. Yeah. 14-year-old girl can just always get you into trouble.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, he has the waist of Sean Livingston. How about that?
Who has the body of a 12-year-old girl.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Drew, he's not anybody you're going to want to hang your hat on at the end of the day when it comes to the defensive end of the floor, getting things done for you in the Western Conference with all those big bodies. But, you know, I mean, you know, he'll give them, you know, 10, 12, and just hopefully he'll give them, you know, some good effort on the defensive end. But, you know, I don't see him being the answer to their problems in that side of the ball.
Last question for me about Dallas. When I was going through Dallas's big players, I accidentally left out Dirk, who is, you know,
tall and good and German.
Yeah, the franchise guy. And I guess maybe it's almost just a Freudian slip or whatever for me, just because I've always sort of questioned Dirk's ability in the clutch and as a leader and toughness. And last season, he seemed to be, I think, taking a step forward along those lines. And then he went through just a brutal offseason on a personal level.
Right.
You know, with his now ex-fiance and, you know, going to jail and ripping him off and lying about her identity. Just, that is not a match.
It was a lot. It was not healthy.
Yeah, that is not a match on the internet success story. That's more of a warning. But do you see that forcing him maybe to regress a little bit? Or do you think he's going to be able to move beyond that? And maybe it would even just something he can channel those issues and make go stronger with it.
The one thing about Dirk is I think he's got a knack for sort of bouncing back from these type of difficulties. I mean, he's never had anything like this before, but obviously his meltdown at the end of the 2006 season, where they basically gave away the championship to the Magic after being up, or the Heat after being up 2-0. And he came back mentally and had, I think, a pretty decent year after that. But, I mean, I don't really think, I don't see this as something that is going to slow him down. He's not, what is he going to be thinking about it when he's on the court playing ball? I mean, maybe it may be hanging over his head in the big picture. But to me, I don't see these kind of things as really affecting players' performance on the court. So I'm going to have to say a big no that that's going to play any kind of role whatsoever in Dirk's production or his mindset this year.
Thursday night, the Lakers in Anaheim handled the Nuggets. Obviously, they had a great series with them last year, and I don't think there's any question about how fun that was to watch. I'm of the opinion, though, especially when you start to factor in, just in terms of where they're going to end up in the conference, when you know a few games without J.R. Smith and all these other things as he starts the year suspended, it's not necessarily that the Nuggets got worse in the offseason, but I feel like teams passed them in the pecking order. What's your opinion on that? They're one of the only teams that really didn't do much to try to improve themselves.
They didn't do a lot at all. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they basically more or less stayed the same. I know they wanted to get a shooter after Klaza departed, and they had the opportunity to bring in Wally Szczerbiak, I believe, but they didn't do it. So, you know, I don't know where I think they're going to be one of the teams that got worse by staying the same. You know, when you look at the fact that a lot of teams with Dallas getting Sean Marion and Lakers getting Ron Artest, teams were out there making moves this summer. Clippers had obviously a terrific draft with getting Blake. And you're right. This team did not take a step forward. And when you don't take a step forward, it's the same as taking a step backward. But the one guy I'm kind of interested in on that team to give him some energy is Ty Lawson. I think he's going to be one of those guys that when he gets the hang of an NBA offense, of just the flow of a game, he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to get into the lane, you know, like Tony Parker style, not as effective as Tony, but he's going to get in there and sort of create a lot of trouble. Anytime you have a point guard who can get into the lane, you can break down just about everything. So I like him for them. But you're right. I mean, I didn't see them taking a big step forward at all this offseason.
Can they get Lawson and Billups on the floor at the same time?
That's a good question.
Thanks.
I don't think they're going to go with that offense with those two guys on there. I mean, I think anytime you got two guys who are primary ball handlers, it never seems to work out that well at the same time. And plus, you two guys who are ball handlers and need the ball to do what they do, you're just minimizing one or both of them, having them both on the floor at the same time, I think. So I like the idea of just having one primary ball handler.
Chauncey Billups, we just talked about him. His ability to come into that clubhouse, which, I mean, I know you'd been around it. It was just a toxic culture of negativity and very difficult. I think they were their own worst enemies. He came in and turned it around and brought accountability and responsibility and every other ability that possibly...
All the good ones.
Right.
Abilities that were needed, you know, to find success. That effect is obviously huge, but we also saw down the end of the stretch of last season that he was getting tired, and you wonder if next season he's going to start slowing down a little bit even more, but he still has that presence. Which do you think matters more in determining Denver's fate this season?
You know, I think that, well, first of all, this guy is, what, 34 years old?
33,
yeah,
34.
There, yeah.
33, okay. So, yeah, I mean, he is... He will probably experience a bit of a decline. But, I mean, I think the fact that he does, or even if he does slow down, I think what he brings in terms of that, I mean, he's one of the great all-time locker room slash leader guys that we've had in this league for a long time.
Agreed.
So he's going to have an influence continued on J.R. Smith, who I expect to turn things around, you know, on and off the floor and inside of his head this season. He's going to be great for Ty Lawson. And I think he's had a terrific effect on Carmelo Anthony's attitude as well. So, I mean, I think Billups still gives you so much, even if he's a step slower, even if he's a bit in decline. What he gives you, in terms of that sort of team chemistry kind of thing, and that just that good locker room guy gives you so much. Because, I mean, you take him away with, from that team, or take away a guy like him, and the collection of personalities they have, and they start losing, or they drop four or five straight, somebody doesn't agree with Carl. I mean, it could be a really poisonous, explosive situation all over again with them. I mean, the precedent is there with, you know, Kenyon and just the way some of those guys have acted up in the past. So I think Billups is definitely that calming influence.
And the rumors are out there now that they're at least interested, or one of the teams in the Steven Jackson conversations, which, you know, I'm sure would make total sense, you know, given how they do everything else down there. You add Steven Jackson to J.R.
Exactly.
Smith and all these other guys. That sounds
at all.
Perfect.
Yeah, that would really test that. You know, George Karl has that reputation for being able to handle, quote, strong personalities.
Right.
And I think a lot of times it's been he's willing to accept them as opposed to not necessarily succeed with them. I think adding Steven Jackson to that locker room would just be,
basically
Steven a bomb
Jackson
waiting to go off.
Steven Jackson is in a bad situation right now because he's created a bad situation.
Right.
I mean, why would any team in their right mind want to bring on a guy like that?
Especially
a championship contender, I mean, we've already talked about it, and the Lakers just showed it last season how important team chemistry is, everybody buying in, everybody being on the same page. You can't win a championship without that stuff. And Jackson is not a guy who is going to lend himself to that type of environment. I mean, he never has. I mean, he's only seen as a guy who spoils the party. So why is a championship contender going to want to bring him in? And then a young team, a rebuilding team, I mean, you got a bunch of young guys on the team. Jackson doesn't look attractive to them either. Who does Jackson look good to? I can't think of a team in the league.
I don't think there's anyone.
Like you said, he's a party spoiler. He's that guy who shows up too drunk, and you have to wrestle his keys away, and it just becomes a real bummer
every freaking weekend.
And then he gets in the car anyway, and then it's just a big mess.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be one thing. It'd be one thing if he was 25 years old, but he's 31, I think, he'll be 32 in the next year. You know, that's just an absolute knock against him, you know, even more so. But, I mean, he's made his own bed. I mean, the whole situation wanting to leave. He's not the first player that's ever wanted to be traded. So, I mean, there's a way to go about it, and he went about it the wrong way, and at that age, you know, and you know, it's just... He didn't do himself any favors.
Right, with that contract that goes till he's about 63 years old.
Yeah.
San Antonio, I mean, the exact opposite in terms of culture that you mentioned, everybody buying into the same thing, everybody being on the same page. The Spurs are probably the model for that over the last decade and a half, or maybe at least the last decade or so.
Right.
They made the first, I think, if my chronology is correct, they made the first big move in terms of the shot to improve, bringing in Richard Jefferson. I think that was the first one of the summer.
More or less.
Right.
Other than maybe Shaq. I don't know.
And then after that, did some smaller things. They brought in Antonio McDyess. They drafted DeJuan Blair, which looks like a phenomenal pick for them.
I mean, his numbers are equal to Griffin's, except for the fact that Griffin's played 28 minutes a game this preseason, and Blair's played 18 minutes a game and has been averaging 14-8. I mean, that's unbelievable numbers.
Right. So last year they had the injury problems. You know, basically everybody at one point or another was hurt.
Yeah.
And this is not a new trend with them. If they can keep those guys healthy, you know, the Manu, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker core, and then you have those guys behind them, and Antonio McDyess, Blair, players like that, Richard
George
Jefferson,
Hill, Roger Mason.
Sure. Do they have the depth
Bonner.
Now to kind of, you know, lessen the load on their big three to the point where they can be whole in April?
Yeah, absolutely, because Popovich has great faith in playing guys like Roger Mason, who started a bunch last year, George Hill, and don't forget about Finley. He can still give you some good quality minutes down the stretch. I mean, they got some great wings, you know, with the addition of Jefferson. But, yeah, I mean, looking at their roster and going through that list of guys, you know, they're actually surprisingly deep. And that's going to be key to get those sort of second-tier guys, the first guys off the bench, to give them quality minutes so they don't have to play Duncan, you know, 39 minutes a game. So Parker doesn't have to play literally the entire game. To keep those guys fresh with their history of injuries by the time the playoffs roll around. I mean, if they can do that, I love that roster. I really love what they're putting together. And the type of team, like you said it already, the exact opposite of some of these other horrible, poisonous locker rooms, which obviously starts from Pop at the top. And they're going to be, you know, they're going to be a team absolutely to contend with. I mean, they're going to, you know, what the way the Nuggets gave the Lakers a run for their money last year, I mean, the Spurs could, in all likelihood, do the same thing this year.
The front office, you know, San Antonio's typically been pretty bottom line centric, and they've often gone for less expensive guys and building around the big three. This year they brought in Jefferson. They spent for Antonio McDyess. It seems like it's an indication that the window on that big three, particularly with Tim Duncan, could be shutting, and they went pretty aggressive to try to make the most of it. A, did it seem that way to you as well? And B, a lot of times when you have a team like that, Boston a couple years ago, where that window could be shutting, it's seen as a motivating factor for a team to really go after it while you know you can. Do you think it'll still have that same effect if you do believe in that with a team like San Antonio that has, by and large, the majority of that team has a ring? Does that motivation factor still play with guys with rings, multiple rings?
Yeah, I think you almost catch the bug when you get a ring for guys like Duncan and Parker. I mean, even, you know, Kobe is a perfect example. You got one, you want to get another one. You want to get another and another and another. And it's just the culture down there. It's just the way that they operate. I mean, it's ring or bust is pretty much how, you know, Tim Duncan and Greg Popovich and that whole organization, you know, that's how they operate. But I also think that, I mean, you're right, the whole window thing, and everybody, whether you're a player or an organization, you're always thinking about that window. And obviously, even though they brought in so many good guys, I think that's why they brought in the Richard Jeffersons, I mean, guys that are bigger money guys than they've typically brought in, because they are aware of the fact that their championship contender window is getting smaller and smaller. It's just the reality of the NBA. Tim Duncan is 33, Ginobili is 32. So bring in these guys, give them more support, more help to sort of keep that window open. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a factor that they're thinking about it. And, I mean, I would argue that Tim Duncan's motivation is just as strong now as it was 10 years ago.
How far behind the Lakers are they? I mean, last year, it's so difficult to diagnose based on last year because so many guys were hurt.
I think they're fairly good ways behind the Lakers, but not because of them. I think because of the Lakers. The Lakers they don't have to readjust. They don't have to bring in a whole new game plan. They don't have to work a whole wave of people into their offense. They know exactly what they're supposed to do. Everybody on the team knows their exact role. That's half the battle right there. The Lakers are just such a well-oiled machine with, you know, great depth, Kobe, everything. So I think it's tough to see, you know, how close they are to the Lakers. I mean, that said, you know, if those two teams matched up in the playoffs, it could be a seven-game series. So what do I know what I'm talking about? But, I mean, I think that they're going to be strong. I mean, I think they're going to be a third. I could conceivably see them being a third seed in the West.
I mean, I could see them being third,
I could see them being
fourth.
Second, too.
Well, I could also see them being fourth.
Which means they're not that far behind the Lakers. So,
but I could also see them, though, fourth or even fifth, just because I think because of their collective health and them being a veteran team, they're not going to be as concerned about their
right,
record.
They won't push. They will not push for a high season.
They're not going for 65 games. That's the thing. That's the one thing that I think could really distance them and the Lakers is a couple of injuries that, you know, it could very likely happen to them. I'm not talking about a guy going down with an Achilles, but the chronic nagging stuff that keeps guys out, you know, 12 to 15 games a season, that's going to be a huge problem for them. And that won't be as much of a problem for the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers have had great luck, except for Bynum, with being fairly healthy.
Yeah. I think I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think Andy and I are probably, and I think if you ask a lot of Lakers fans, based on the history the Lakers have struggled playing up in Portland, that the Trailblazers might be the scariest team in the Western Conference. Not necessarily even, you know, a lot of people say San Antonio is better. From a Laker fan standpoint, I know a lot of people see Portland as a scarier bunch in terms of a playoff matchup or any of that. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, especially if, and I think this is going to happen, this is the year that Oden finally takes his leap. This is his fourth year, I believe. And if he, I mean, he's got so much potential and ability to just play, just control the airspace on the defensive end. If he can do that and take that leap, that's going to be one thing that's going to make them very scary to the Lakers. Also, we talked earlier about Denver playing Lawson and Billups together. I didn't like that, but I do like the idea of playing Brandon Roy and Andre Miller together, which will make them incredibly dangerous because they'll be super effective either running or in the half court. So they can pretty much give you any kind of look. I like the Blazers a lot, and I think if they sort of get that head of steam and that kind of swagger that they're not worried about the fact that the Lakers are defending champions and far more experienced than they are, they could be very dangerous to a lot of people.
Well, I think that's definitely there because if you watch them play the Lakers, they're not intimidated in the slightest.
No,
right.
At all.
And you need that. You need that.
You had mentioned Miller, and I was really, really in favor of that pickup for Portland. I think Miller's been a very underrated player in the league for a long time, and I like the idea of how he can have Roy play a little bit more off the ball and not make him have to do as much. But
yeah.
So far, it's been kind of slow going in them developing chemistry, and one factor that I had forgotten about that could be legitimate is Miller's always been kind of a loner, very quiet, doesn't really socialize much on or off the court. And
right.
It seems like, you know, he had also said that if he had known that he wasn't guaranteed the starting job, he might not have signed there. Is there any chemistry issue with them that you see could be developing, or is that just preseason learning how to play with each other?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think you've got to learn how to play with guys who you've never played with before. But this is what's going to decide or determine whether or not they have these chemistry issues. If they get off to a hot start, it just won't be a problem. But if they don't, guys are complaining about, oh, I should be on the floor more. I mean, they both average. I mean, obviously you can't tell too much from preseason, so you don't put a lot of stock into it. But they both average 26 minutes a game in the preseason. It's all about the start they get off to. I mean, for Miller, it's obviously not about shots because he's not a volume shooter. He never has been. I think his career's averaged maybe 12 shots a game. And I think he understands that Roy is one of the next, you know, top-level superstars in this league. So I really think if they really jump out of the gate, they're gelling, Miller's getting everybody the ball, Roy is adjusting to playing off the ball a little bit more than he ever has, I think they should be okay.
Their length, I think, is one of the things. You know, we talked about Odin.
Outlaw,
Odin.
LaMarcus Aldridge,
right.
Webster.
Right, when Brandon Roy and Greg Oden have a child, he'll be just called Oi. you were talking about, you know, Webster and Aldridge and Odin and all these other players. From a matchup standpoint, how can they frustrate, do you think, what the Lakers do? Because obviously, on this show and in this city, all that really matters is how anything affects the Lakers.
Right, obviously, with you guys.
Right.
You know, when you're long like that, when you have that type of length and you can clog up passing lanes and you can get up there in that defensive airspace, you got to work that much harder to get your shot off. And you know what that is? When you have those long arms like that, you rely less on that sort of one-on-one breaking people down off the dribble kind of game. And you really get into moving the ball to the open spaces, which is what the Lakers are very good at. So they're just going to continue to do that. But, I mean, it's very frustrating when you're playing against a team that's so long. And if they're motivated and moving their feet, their arms are even longer. So it's going to be a team type of situation, team ball, to beat a long team. That's how you beat a long team. You don't beat a long team with your feet off the dribble. So, I mean, the Lakers know that, and it's pretty much how they beat everybody last year, was moving that ball around, and Kobe.
You mentioned team ball, and the Portland is one of the few teams in the league that are as deep as the Lakers, and they're getting Martell Webster to return. People have forgotten about him. He can add a lot. Oden is hopefully going to be taking that leap. Rudy Fernandez wants more minutes. You bring in Andre Miller, moving Blake to the bench. It's
right.
Great having that depth, but obviously everybody's not going to get all the minutes and all the shots that they want, and they're a very collectively young team. Do you think that they can find the maturity to handle that and keep it about, you know, the business of winning?
There's always going to be people who are unhappy because they are a very young team, and you got guys who have, big contract at stake, and guys are always going to think about that. The idea of, how many shots are there to go around? I mean, not everybody's going to be happy, but I don't know yet that players will be disappointed enough to make a big stink about it. That's always, a potential for guys to do that. But, I think that they're going to be fine in terms of that chemistry situation, because I think they are going to jump out to a hot start. And the thing about it, if they do, and some of the younger guys, Nicholas Batum or whoever you want, isn't getting the minutes, then it's going to be very obvious that may not be the situation for that particular player. They're not going to be able to retain everybody they have on that roster. They can't pay everybody. So it's just like the Bulls were, the situation they were in a few years ago when they had so much great young talent, and they ultimately couldn't keep everybody because it just simply, you can't pay five guys big deals.
Right. We didn't even mention a guy like Jared Bayless, who was obviously very highly regarded.
Right, and he's a perfect example of a guy who's probably going to be with another team in a couple of years.
Right. All right, last question for you, and we appreciate all this depth and background on the Western Conference. Who's in the finals? Who do you have in the Western Conference Finals, keeping in mind that, you want to be able to show your face in Staples Center, so I'd probably include the Lakers in there, or else people might mug you on the streets.
Well, I'm just trying to think of the other team that I have with them.
We're more concerned for your safety
than
anything
else. It's the Lakers' second unit versus the Lakers' first unit.
Right.
Yeah, right. You know what? We just got done talking about the Blazers. I know that's a very optimistic pick. But if they could put it all together, and like I said, if Oden makes those strides, and Roy is going to make strides as well, it would not be out of the question to see a Blazers-Lakers Western Conference Finals. I mean, that would be an amazing battle.
Andy,
there's teams that are a lot more seasoned, like the Mavericks and the Spurs, but I like that young blood. I mean, I just think every year, or at least every other year, there's a young team that just comes out of nowhere with that swagger that we talked about and just lays it down and just gets in there. So, I mean, I think the Portland, the Blazers could be that team this year.
I actually agree with you.
Yeah, try not to be discouraged by the fact that we apparently both have the Blazers and the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals.
Wow.
And we're never right about
three
anything.
With Blazers and the Lakers in the Western Conference.
Amazing. We're always wrong. So before you
That's
put
not
this...
True. I said last year that Sacramento would be awful, and I was right.
That's true. Good point.
No, you were wrong. They were terrible.
Let's not get into semantics. Chris Palmer, ESPN The Magazine. As always, fantastic stuff. We really appreciate the time and you coming on, and we look forward to doing it again soon.
Absolutely. Love talking hoops with the K-Brothers.
Cool, man. Thank you.
All right. See you guys.
Later.
Bye.
That was fun. Chris Palmer, ESPN The Magazine. Great insight, depth. He knew statistics.
And
he knew how many minutes a night Andre Miller's played in the preseason.
And you know what? The thing about Chris is if we had tried to trip him up by asking him some Moto X question,
nope,
he'd have known.
He could have gotten that too. He covers all kinds of stuff. He's probably the only guy on the planet with an amazing reservoir of both NBA knowledge and action sports.
Yeah.
And I've covered both, but I don't have the depth of either that he has. So.
No, it's pretty impressive.
They should get him to host the show.
Like Lamar Odom, he's versatile.
That's right. One team we didn't mention, and just really quick, I have our season preview up in the Lakers blog at the LA Times, which you should go read because it's spectacular. The Houston Rockets, we didn't talk about them too much. You know, bottom line, they're going to be a very difficult team to play, I think, but without Yao and with an unhealthy T-Mac, they don't have a lot of star power. You know, both of us, I think, have them dropping out of the playoffs, correct?
Oh, yeah.
I
have them dropping more than you. I know you've said before. Like,
I think they're an eighth. They finish ninth or tenth, something like that.
I think tenth would be generous.
Right. So a lot of it depends on what the Clippers do. But anyway, from a Laker fan standpoint, the real interest is with Trevor Ariza there. What do you think is going to happen with him this year? You know, really quick.
I think he's going to struggle in terms of if you measure success this season – and measure it in terms of what is expected from him, what is hoped from him versus
in terms of offensive production, in
offensive
terms of
production,
everything.
More responsibility, sure. Versus success as it was defined last year with the Lakers, where he was more complimentary. I understand it's a different scale, but you have to judge players' success on what you want from him. I think he's going to have a difficult time. It's much harder to get these shots off when an opposing team has to keep in mind Kobe and Powell, both of whom often need double teams by them, you know, just in
sure.
themselves.
Absolutely.
Lamar, you can't leave alone. Andrew Bynum, even struggling, you can't leave alone. Derek Fisher, who had been very streaky the entire playoffs, you know he can hit big shots. You can't leave him alone. Teams were daring Trevor to take these three-point shots, and granted, he burned them. But he's not going to get dared
right.
like
somebody,
that at all.
Somebody had to be left open,
exactly.
And teams chose
and,
to, you know, so.
It's going to be difficult, right. Particularly on a team like Houston, where other than Aaron Brooks and, you know, Scola's a fairly good scorer, and, you know, Battier, you got to keep an eye on him in the corner, but they don't have a lot of guys that really offensively can generate what you need. It's a very different, you know, kettle of fish.
Yeah, not, there are very few guys on that team that create their own shot. I mean, there aren't really any outside of, I guess, maybe Aaron Brooks.
So, I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, more or less. I think he's going to do fine. I think if you judge him as a guy who's going to be a star, I don't think Trevor Ariza will ever be a star. I don't think that people will be disappointed at, you know, his production versus his contract over the course of that. I think he's fine. So it just depends. I mean, that team is going to be interesting to watch just because to see how they evolve, you know, as they're almost as an experiment with, you know, if you can get a team full of underrated in some way role players without a star to play, you know, a high caliber basketball. So it'll be interesting to watch.
I will say this with Trevor, actually, and this had kind of popped in my head a day or so ago. Depending on how Houston does, and if they really struggle without having sort of that star power, and T-Mac is never really himself, and, you know, they're clearly not going anywhere. But also, if they start looking at Ariza and think, you know, he may just be a complimentary player, like a very good one. It wouldn't shock me to see him get moved.
I don't know.
Because his contract is pretty reasonable, and he is a great addition to a team that's there.
Right, but he's also a great addition. You know, the same thing that could keep him moving is the same thing that could keep him there. He's a reasonably priced, very solid complimentary player that fits in well with the system that they want to do.
So, I understand that.
Anything's possible, but you know, I wouldn't be looking for that necessarily. Speaking of Texas.
Sure.
Houston, the Rockets, Trevor Ariza, all located now in Texas.
Well, the first two had always been
right
in Texas.
All of them. George W. Bush, former president.
He hails from Texas.
He also hails from Texas. He used to be president. LeBron James made news in a recent interview, Maxim.com. He was asked if he could presumably dunk on anyone. And his response, if it doesn't have to be a basketball player, George W. Bush, I would dunk on his ass, break the rim, and shatter the glass.
Well,
end quote.
First of all, he's very lucky that he did not make that statement when Bush
he was in office.
And it was still in office, and also...
You can't threaten a sitting president. Is dunking, threaten to dunk on a sitting president, is that a threat?
I think during that climate when, you know, anything said negative about the president during, quote, wartime was considered subversive, I think that would have at the very least put LeBron on a watch list.
It might have.
Like similar to like the Nixon enemies list.
Maybe.
I think Bush would have ended up on one of those lists.
It's very possible. All right, but it begs the question. If you could dunk on any president, sitting, former, you choose, the former head of state of our union, of your choosing. Who are you dunking on?
Well, I thought about this, and my, honestly, my first reaction was FDR, just because he had been in office like 12 years.
He was a long time.
He might need to get taken down a peg. But then I thought about it a little more, and I'm like, you can't dunk on a guy, braces, wheelchair,
no.
Polio.
It's not competitive.
That's not
it's not,
cool.
No, it doesn't
not
look
cool
good.
At all.
You have, especially now, it's people are very sensitive about
exactly.
that sort of thing, very PC.
You could get away with that maybe when he was president, like in that era, not necessarily on him.
Well, when he was president, they tended to hide the fact
right.
that he was in a wheelchair.
So
it
they probably would have
seen.
Encouraged me to dunk on him.
It's possible, just to show how, you know, hardy he was.
Exactly.
Time.
So I rethought it, and I decided I
that which was smart.
I decided that I would dunk on Herbert Hoover.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not a very good president.
No, he was not a good president. You know, he kind of led us into the Depression.
Yes.
He was pro-prohibition, which I absolutely cannot get behind.
No.
That is awful. Although
you would have been one of those guys knocking on the speakeasy door with like the special knock and the little eyes thing slides by.
And the wall spins
right.
around like from a pet shop.
You would have been that guy.
Although I would have loved
to. You'd have gotten arrested in a lot of raids.
I would have loved a second career as a bootlegger though. I think that would have been
sure.
exciting. He invented a really dumb game called Hooverball. Which is basically volleyball but using a medicine ball and you just have to like heave it over the net back and forth.
Well, that's for fitness.
It's for fitness, but that's just dumb. That's just sort of stupid.
All right.
And he claims to be Stanford's first student because he went there, but he was the first guy to ever sleep in a dorm. So he decided to crow about being Stanford's first student, which is both dumb. And I went to SC, so he's a Pac-10 rival.
Right.
And you remember
as if that wasn't enough right there.
Mom.
Yes.
Used to, I don't know why, I for the life of me.
Because she liked it.
Yeah, because she liked it.
I know why.
She used to make you and I go see various productions of Annie.
Every summer we had to go see Annie.
We must have seen
Little Orphan Annie.
We must have seen Annie like 10 times at the Fox in San
Francisco.
And there's this song from Annie. That drives me insane, and whenever I think of him,
it
drives me nuts. So I kind of have a grudge against Hoover.
That's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
The Depression, you can say, is his fault. The whole Hoover ball thing, sure.
So I don't think
it's fair to penalize
what I would
him because,
do is I
you
would,
know, he's part of a musical.
I don't care. I don't care. It's collateral damage. I would take a medicine ball. And I would dunk on his ass and break the rim and shatter the glass on Herbert
wow.
Hoover.
I initially went with my first choice was William Henry Harrison.
Sure.
Because it's like, here's the thing. You get to be president. It's a big deal. Even back then, 1830-something or whatever it was when he got to be president.
It gave you gravitas.
Right. You know, you were still an important man. 1841, the man was president. And only in 1841 because... When it came time for his inauguration, it was a very cold and wet day, and he had too much pride to put on a coat. He didn't want, I'm not making that up, he did not want to wear a coat to his inauguration in the rain, and you know what happened? He got sick, and he died.
Yeah, he was president
for
like a month.
He got pneumonia,
right?
And he died, because he wouldn't put on a coat. Put on a coat, you're the president. People need you to be president. You know, yes, a month later, he was dead. Dead. Just, I mean, that's ridiculous. Put on a coat. And that left John Tyler in charge, and if memory serves, he wasn't very good at being president either. But after that, I didn't, you know, I thought, you know, aim a little higher. You know, yes, he should be chastised, but at the same time, he in the end, he's just sort of William Henry Harrison, kind of just a minor footnote in presidential history, kind of a curiosity more than anything else. So I aimed a little higher. I went with Lincoln.
Ooh.
Here's why.
Okay.
Okay. Freed the slaves. Preserve the Union, one of our finest orators, all things that I support.
I was about to say, where are you going with this?
These are all great things.
Okay. Good to clarify.
You got to support all these things. Good stuff. But he was our tallest president at 6'4".
So
it looks good on the poster when you soar over 6'4", pretty tall. I mean, that's a good... 6 inches taller than me. Plus, it's like Fletch, you know, 6 whatever with the, you know, in shoes, 6'10" with the afro. If he puts on the stovepipe hat, suddenly we're talking 6'9", 6'10", and I'm soaring over that. You know, think of like James Madison or something like that. He was, I think, like 5'2" or something, a very
right.
short little man. That's not impressive. Dunk over Lincoln. He's got the reach. Jay Billis would have liked him. He's got reach.
Oh, Jay Billis' scouting report on Lincoln was through
reach.
The roof.
I know it's not going to be a popular choice, but, you know, politically, I'm not about politics in this situation. I'm about the photo.
One hand slammer jammer.
Exactly. Right on Abe Lincoln's head.
That, you know what though? I think a poster of you posterizing Lincoln, that would sell.
That would sell. Absolutely.
That would sell.
I would buy that much more than I think a poster of me posterizing William Henry Harrison is not as popular. How about a tattoo of me posterizing Lincoln on Deshaun Stevenson's throat?
That's interesting.
Or the back of his neck, because the Lincoln is already there. So you put that on the back of his neck.
Do you think Lincoln ever considered getting those fives and himself on his own throat just to make sure
well,
he
yes,
knew who
I
he was?
Don't think he was on the $5 bill at that point.
But I mean,
I do think actually he considered getting a tattoo of Deshaun Stevenson, which is very odd, but.
No regard
well, I think
for human life!
That would be me. And you know what? I would pick him up after because I respect the man.
You know what else is
interesting? I respect what he did.
What else is interesting is that Lincoln had a secretary named Deshaun.
Deshaun.
And Deshaun.
Has a publicist.
Has a publicist named Lincoln.
Right.
Anyone else you'd want to dunk on?
George Lucas.
Yeah.
And I would do it. George Lucas, of course, the famed creator of the Star Wars saga. I would dunk on him both with scale models and CGI. Just to show him that the scale models were better and how he ruined the Star Wars.
Would you make him get in front of a green screen?
I would,
to make him
I'm
more
saying
familiar?
I would do both. I would do it and then I would dunk on him and Jar Jar Binks at the same time. that's who I would choose. I would dunk
I'll give him no respect.
I agree. For ruining the Star Wars franchise, I would dunk on George Lucas.
I would dunk on Sean Penn.
Sure.
I find him just incredibly pretentious and annoying.
All right.
Please.
Yeah. No,
fine
no,
actor. One of our finest.
Very good actor.
Yes.
Seems like he would be so little fun to be around. Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Because he's just an arrogant jerk and no talent.
Yeah.
I would dunk on, you know, the old man from those Six Flags commercials who's just really
creepy?
He's
not really an old man.
I know,
think.
But
he's
dressed
a young
like
man.
An old.
Right.
And he dances around. That's
yeah.
creepy.
But, you know, I don't think that's his fault. I would dunk on the guy who created the character.
Well,
he's just a working
that's
actor.
That's no fun. I would dunk on that Six Flags.
Dunk on some ad guy.
I would. I would dunk on him.
Okay.
And,
you've really thought a lot about
I
this.
I have.
You have a long list.
J.R. Smith.
This is your Nixon's enemies list.
Just
you know,
so I could celebrate
on.
Like J.R. Smith after dunking on him and, you know, let him know how it feels. You know, he likes to celebrate a little bit. Maybe he.
A little taste of his own medicine.
And then I thought, what about Gandhi? Just because it's so wrong.
Well, he's dead.
Right,
well,
sure.
So is Lincoln.
Well, so half the people we have. That's so wrong, though, that I'm like, if you're gonna do
why
this,
would
go
you
taboo.
Think about dunking on Gandhi?
I don't
I mean,
know
at
why.
Least I had a reason for dunking.
No!
Gandhi was not tall.
I don't know why. It's terrible. Gandhi
was
a great man. He was a terrific man.
I mean, where do you...
It
Lincoln was a
my
pure
head.
Height thing.
It popped into my head and I don't know. It's like Dan Aykroyd with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It just popped into my head.
I don't
it's
know.
Terrible. He was a wonderful
very
man.
Very nice man, that Gandhi.
He anyway. Would have forgiven me.
He probably would have. I wouldn't have, but you finally, as we wrap up the final podcast before the regular season begins, Stephon Marbury is back in the news, sort of. I mean, this is not brand news.
Star.
It's
the
slightly,
cat is out of the bag.
The cat is out of the bag. You know, this came out a few days ago. We're recording on Friday. You know, most people have seen this by now, but it's still, to me, worth talking about. He's going to be taking, this is, might go down in history as one of the greatest quotes in sports history. Stephon Marbury announcing that he will be sitting out this season. I'm resting, doing what Michael Jordan did, enjoy life, do things I haven't done for 16 years, keep building my empire. This is what he told the New York Post. I wasn't going to Boston for that money. He was offered a minimum, veterans minimum over the summer, I guess, to return
and
to Boston.
And clearly, the way he played last
million.
Year with Boston,
I was
he
actually,
deserved a raise.
I was shocked that they did that. 1 year offer from the Celtics. I wasn't going to Boston for that money, he says. It was a prudent business decision to take off this year. Aside from that contract, though, once he said no to the Celtics, isn't Stephon Marbury announcing, and things got worse for him as the summer went along, isn't Stephon Marbury announcing that he's not going to play this year a little bit like, say, me announcing that I will not be playing in the NBA this season?
Yeah,
aren't these things self-evident at some point?
Yeah, to a certain degree, the NBA announced that Stephon Marbury would not be playing.
Right, but the story gets better because he apparently then, this is back, I believe, on about the 17th, went on a tweeting rampage against ESPN. Now, I guess
the same ESPN that sponsors this podcast.
Right. I guess he was upset because people at ESPN were apparently, or he thought, were covering his funeral, his father's funeral. I have no idea what was going on or not. But he sent off like 10 or 12 tweets against, calling out ESPN. So not only is he seems unlikely, I guess, to get into, to the NBA this year, he may have hurt his chances of doing like the Jalen Rose thing and getting a commentary job at the same time. He's kind of cutting off. I hope his empire doesn't include commentary for the ESPN.
Well,
this has hurt him.
What I want to know is, is there time to both juggle the building of an empire and taking on a major news conglomerate in a Twitter war?
I think there is.
How do you juggle those balls?
If you're not playing NBA basketball, you have to cut something.
Maybe that's
something
why
has to go.
Maybe that's why
that's
he's
probably
not playing.
I will say, in all these tweets, and they are, many of them are fantastic, there is one that I kind of like. He says, the clowns at ESPN that speak my name, get ready to tell the world why you did what you did on ESPN. I love Twitter as the media is dead. LOL. That's actually true.
Yeah, he's correct.
He's kind of crazy, but that part's actually true.
The media is
dead.
What I think is interesting too is this statement. In today's media, you can see for yourself, ESPN is trying to make a bunch of Stuart Scotts. Sorry, it's not happening. Not enough soul.
Booyah!
The cat is out of the bag.
Now,
CJ, how close do you think we are to being Stuart Scott? Booyah!
And which one of us is closer?
Separated at birth.
Yeah.
Which one of us do you think is closer to becoming Stuart Scott?
Not like Stuart Scott in terms of just his prominence at the network, but literally
the essence of Stu Scott.
Channeling him.
CJ, who I've always considered cooler than the other side of the pillow, don't give me the okey-doke on this. Who do you think is closer to Stuart Scott?
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Wait, hold on. Let me counter with Booyah! That's all I got.
I'm going to lean towards Brian on the strength of the booyah. Andy, you are like 1A, but I had to go with one of the two of you, because of the strength of the booyah, although I did like the way you worked the reference.
Right, he totally got that, but I on the strength of my booyah.
Oh.
Wow.
If there's anything you could rest your hat on, it's the strength of your booyah.
The strength, God, that should have been my fantasy
team. I've often been accused
name.
Of sitting way too long on my booyah. To accomplish anything.
My fantasy team should have been named the strength of my booyah.
Wow. So, yeah, no Stephon Marbury this year. He is, though, for those of you who are worried about this sort of thing, planning a return.
Oh, also, too, you'll need to censor some of the people that work at ESPN, as there are some people who have a laundry list of skeletons. Skeletons, I believe he means.
Skeletons.
Are you worried at all, Brian?
Yeah.
The cat is out of the bag.
I don't, there are some certain things, I do not want told.
I actually have a closet full of cats and bags.
Right. I don't, and he would know about skeletons.
He would know.
Actually, at this point, he has no skeletons. Yeah, there are some certain things I'd like to keep on the down low.
The body's buried?
Yeah, the period between 1993 and 1996. I'm not going to say why. I'm just saying, I don't want people digging around.
I just hope that clips from my lost weekend don't turn up on YouTube.
Ooh. Yeah, so we all look forward to a return of Stephon Marbury into the league 2010-2011. Get yourselves ready. Get your popcorn ready.
Do you think he's making a mistake? If he comes back in 2010-2011, do you think he is making a mistake
pitting himself against all the big free agents.
No, I think that's smart. You're getting people, you're going out there in a season, you're making yourself one of the marquee names.
Okay.
I think that's what he's aiming to do.
Okay. I didn't know if he maybe would have been better off going in ought 11, ought 12, where he could be the premier free agent.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting point. So, yeah, the next week when we return, there will have been a real regular season game played. The season will be going. All this preseason nonsense is done. And, I can't be even any more excited about it.
Oh God, bring it on.
Bring it on.
Bring it on.
So until then, when we have the real games to talk about, I am Brian Kamenetsky at the LATimes.com Lakers blog. My brother Andrew, who hates Gandhi. We will see you next week.
I don't hate him. I just wanted to dunk on him.